Hey guys, this is Shru.
And this is G3.
And you are listening to Bioscope. Until a few years ago, genetic tests were totally a thing of science fiction. But now, not so much. At-home genetic tests are now widely available from a number of companies like 23andMe, Ancestry.com, and National Geographic. In fact, they offer these tests at a price point that is affordable for many. You'll probably end up spending only as much as you would on a nice group dinner. With half a teaspoon of your spit and a couple of $100, these companies offer to unlock your genetic secrets. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, we've come a long way from Mendel's experiments that discovered the units of inheritance that we call genes. Of course, we're still nowhere close to fully understanding the immense complexity of genetics, but our progress in understanding this space has been exponential in the last few decades.
Throughout the course of the 20th century, we gained a firm grasp of the basics of biological inheritance, how genes are passed from one generation to another, and how they encode the proteins that all life is built with. In the 1980s, we identified genes that had mutated, making faulty proteins which could cause terrible diseases such as cystic fibrosis and muscular dystrophy.
The greatest feat yet was the Human Genome Project. Beginning on October 1, 1990, the project aimed to sequence and map all of the genes, together known as the genome, of members of our species, humans, or Homo sapiens. By 2003, the Human Genome Project had delivered the human DNA sequence in its entirety.
The sequencing of human genome meant we could read human DNA and start interpreting things like inheritance, evolution, and disease. The technology to read and process DNA has been evolving, and we can now pump out the genomes of hundreds of thousands of people for peanuts.
The most common things genetic tests reveal are ancestry, susceptibility to diseases that are genetically passed down, and other genetic traits. While the overall genetic testing process is not simple, we thought it might be fun to learn some of the basics here. The next time someone talks to you about genetic testing, or you choose to take one yourself, you can totally sound like an expert.
To understand information from genes, scientists use a type of genetic variation called SNPs. SNPs, which is actually abbreviated as SNP, stands for single nucleotide polymorphism. And it is the most common type of genetic variation among people. There are four naturally occurring nucleotides in our DNA, referred to as A, C, G, and T. A SNP may replace C with T in a certain stretch of DNA. SNPs occur normally throughout a person's DNA and are passed down through generations. On average, they occur almost once in every 1,000 nucleotides, which means there are roughly 4 to 5 million SNPs in a person's genome. They can act as biological markers, helping scientists locate genes that are associated with disease. While most SNPs have no effect on health or development, some may help predict an individual's response to certain drugs, toxins, and risk of developing particular diseases. SNPs are also used to track the inheritance of disease within families.
When it comes to unlocking information about our ancestry, chromosomes are the key. In our last episode, we touched on how genetic traits are passed from parents to offsprings through chromosomes. Remember? Researchers can track paternal ancestry by looking at the Y chromosome, which fathers pass down to their male children. Maternal ancestry, similarly, can be found in mitochondrial DNA, which mothers pass to all of their children. Apart from the DNAs packaged in chromosomes, cell structures called mitochondria also have a small amount of their own DNA, which is what the mothers pass down to all their children. Mitochondrial DNA testing provides information about the direct female ancestral line. The richest source of ancestral information for most of the commercially available genetic tests, though, is by comparing the information in the 22 non-sex chromosomes against massive libraries of data.
Now let's get into how ancestry testing actually works commercially. As you might know by now, the human genome is really long. It has about 3 billion base pairs, and 99.9% of this is common in all humans. Processing 3 billion base pairs for all tests is an overkill. So companies don't bother looking at every single letter. Instead, to speed up the process, they look out for the locations on the genome where people commonly vary from one another, which is about 500,000 SNPs or more.
As soon as companies get your spit sample, they extract your DNA, make copies of them, and then break those strands into shorter chunks. These chunks are then fed into a machine called a genotyping array. These arrays work very similar to a coin sorter for the SNPs. They'll tell which versions of SNPs you've inherited and at what location in the genome. These can be useful starting points for tracing your ancestry. The more SNPs we share in common with another person, the more likely we share a similar and more recent ancestry. Your ancestry is mostly estimated by comparing your SNP results with the genetic database of people with known ancestries. When you look at your ancestry information, the results are typically shared in percent values. So if your test result says you're 29% South Asian, it's because 29% of your DNA chunks were most likely to have come from a group that was labeled as South Asian in their database. The reverse is true as well in finding new ancestral groups. If an algorithm finds that a certain number of people have high similarity in certain SNPs, and the researchers all know from a survey or like some information the customers shared that they all trace their heritage back to Britain, they might then label that group as British.
Organizations that started providing ancestry reports also expanded their offerings to provide some traits you might possess, such as color of your hair, the type of earwax you generate, and if you have freckles or not. While the accuracy of these predictions is debatable, it is still fascinating to understand how much a DNA sequence can reveal about you. 23andMe, a very popular ancestral testing company, reports it uses two different models to predict such traits: statistical model and a curated model.
Some traits such as hair curliness, freckles, that are influenced not just by genetics but also by non-genetic factors, are typically inferred using statistical models. The way they do this is by looking at your genetic data along with demographic data from tens of thousands of their customers to calculate a likelihood score.
Some other traits such as earwax type and bitter taste perception are influenced by genetic variants. Over time, 23andMe has built a well-researched database for these kinds of traits by surveying their customers while also capturing their genetic variants. Now, when they get your sample, they use a curated model to match genetic variants in your genome with those in the database. This lets them predict the likelihood of you possessing these traits. The million-dollar question, however, is, how accurate are these tests?
Yeah, I found an interesting article online. We know that identical twins have the same DNA, so you would expect the results to be identical as well, right? However, the article talks about a case where the ancestry results were different. It also goes on to say that the same sample sent to different ancestry testing services, like different companies, also produce different results. Why is that?
First of all, ancestry test does not look at all 3 billion pairs of DNA. This can cause some information to be missed. In addition, the process of genotyping is also not 100% accurate. Errors aside, the genotyping we get from each of the consumer testing companies should be just about identical to one another. But how each company analyzes the data and the databases they leverage varies. And that's why there is a variance in results from one company's test to another. In addition, the reference databases are largely based on people who are self-reporting their ancestry. Now, while these people may be pretty confident that they know where their families come from, it's not a perfect measure.
There's also bias in the data collected across the world. Historically, biomedical research is disproportionately focused on participants of European descent. Due to this bias, most of the reference data is from European populations too. This, for instance, has led to the discovery of many subpopulations in Europe, while, say, compared to Asia. Hope we've piqued your interest in genetic testing. More than 30 million individuals have taken and contributed to ancestry testing so far. Are you going to be the next one?
We hope you like this episode. Follow us on Instagram at bioscope_podcast or email us at bioscope.podcast@gmail.com.